Today's episode of Preconceived was recorded over a year ago and was one of our most popular episodes. It's called The Baby Decision, featuring Merle Bombardieri, a therapist who helps people decide whether or not they want to have kids. I'm going to be reposting some of our most popular episodes over the next few months for our new listeners. And this episode was certainly one of the popular ones that seemed to have an impact on a lot of people based on what I heard.
You are listening to Preconceived, where we examine the preconceptions that shape how we view the world and the paradigms by which we live our lives.
Hi, everybody. I'm Zale Mednick, and welcome to another episode of Preconceived. If you are enjoying our podcast, please be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or on whatever podcasting platform you use, and be sure to rate and review us. Today, we are going to be discussing the preconceptions associated with the decision of whether or not to have kids. I am delighted to welcome Merle Bombardieri to the podcast. Merle is the author of The Baby Decision, How to Make the Most Important Choice of Your Life. She's a clinical social worker and coach in private practice in Lexington, Massachusetts. She has contributed to the Boston Globe and has been featured in the New York Times and the Washington Post. Merle, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to chat about this. And it's funny, you, when we were chatting beforehand, you said this is technically the most on-point theme I have on the podcast, Preconceived. And we're talking about preconception. But it actually is really on point with the podcast, because to me, this topic is one of those quintessential themes that really taps into how our preconceptions can really shape our lives. Having kids is one of the quote-unquote milestones that we typically list as part of life's journey. We're raised by our parents, we go off to college, we find a partner, we establish our careers, we get married, then we have kids. Then we simultaneously focus on our careers and family life for the ensuing years, and then we retire, have grandchildren, etc. So having kids is a big part of that. And these are all kind of facets that we have and I've been hoping to explore in the podcast, but kids is a big one. And while having kids is, of course, a decision, it's so ingrained in the framework by which many of us live our lives that it can certainly be tough to step back and really look at it as a free decision on its own without external pressures and precedents. So to me, I guess the preconception is that you have to have kids, even though obviously you don't, in order to experience life to the fullest. But I guess to get started, what do you think? I just said a mouthful there, but what do you think is the biggest preconception about having kids?
Well, I think the assumption that everybody has to have kids and that you can't have a full life or be happy without kids. So there are a lot of preconceptions about a child-free life that interfere with people actually considering it. And I believe that if people just have kids because that's what people do, they don't really quite know what they're getting themselves into. And when they have a bad day, when they're getting up in the middle of the night five times, or they have concert tickets for one of their favorite stars who's only in town for one day, and they have to cancel because their child is sick or a babysitter is sick, they can feel like victims. You know, parenthood is so awful. If they consider, really think about what having a child means to them, and they have looked at the child-free life and chosen to have a child, they're more committed and they are more willing and comfortable accepting the difficult things about children as well as the wonderful things about children.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I'm at the age now, I'm 31, so I'm seeing a lot of my friends start having kids. And I mean, most of them, I think, have had intelligent decision-making processes about it. But what do you think typically goes into, what's the current status of how much do people actually make a conscious decision to have kids versus how much are people just having kids because that's what you do? And that's not to diminish people's experiences or their choices, but are people really acknowledging, I don't have to have kids, let's have this discussion, let's make a decision about it?
My view is kind of skewed because I'm an expert in this topic, so people seek me out because they want help. Many people have bought my book. I've sold about 4,000 copies, and people attend my workshops. And people who seek me out are people who are saying, wait a minute, I'm not sure what I want to do.
So you're seeing a lot of those people who have kind of jumped into that and said, wait a second, I don't have to have kids. I want to put a pause and really consider this.
Right. I can't do it just because my parents would like me to, or if they're in a partnered relationship because my partner wants me to. This is a big deal, and I really need to be in it 100% if I'm going to do it.
And how do you make a decision that is so permanent about something so important and life-altering? I mean, this is up there with, this is probably up there. I was going to say this is up there with marriage. This is up there with which career. This might be bigger than both.
Oh, it is the hardest decision because you can get a divorce. You can change jobs, change careers. You can move to an entirely different country. Parenthood is the only thing that isn't reversible. Once you are a parent, you're a parent. Even if you decided you want to raise that child, you have to find someone else to raise the child, and you would be heavily influenced by the experience of having a child and then deciding not to raise it. So it's not something that you can reverse.
What do you find is the most common source of inner conflict when someone comes to see you debating whether or not they want to have kids? Is it a particular experience? Is it a particular external pressure? I'm sure there's multiple, but what are some of the big ones for you?
Well, I think the thing is that so many people are attracted to having a child or children, and actually one preconception is that if you have one child, you have to have two or more. And actually, nowadays, with concern about the environment and financial difficulties that young people are having in paying off loans, people are overwhelmed. If they haven't even had one child and they don't know that they're going to love or hate being a parent, how can they go in saying, well, if we have one, we have to have two or three because we can't have a spoiled, lonely, miserable, only child? When actually, research is showing that only children are doing extremely well. They are more mentally healthy than the rest of us, higher achievers than the rest of us, and they're actually voted most popular in their class. They're really good at socializing because they don't have the history of conflict and competition with siblings at home. So our assumptions that if you have one, you have to have two, that's one thing that actually makes people terrified. Other things that are involved in decision-making today is the difficulty of combining a career and parenting. This is very, very difficult. And of course, you're in Canada where there is wonderful parental leave. I remember I talked to someone from Toronto, and she told me and her husband told me, even he as a man, how many months of paid leave. I just threw up my hands to say, a lot of people would happily decide to have children if they had those kinds of supports. So yeah. In this country, the lack of provision of childcare and of paid leave is really, really huge.
I want to go back to one thing you said there about the only child. I find that fascinating. I'm surprised about that research about only children because there is such a stigma. And I mean, just even doing some of the research for this podcast, I saw there's a lot of judgment amongst
yes.
people who only have one child because of all the stigma about, well, only children, they can maybe be selfish. They don't know how to interact with people to the same degree they're sharing. But so that research has really shown that that's more of a myth than a reality?
Yes, yes. Actually, there was just an article in the Washington Post this week and also a podcast in which the myth was debunked. And there are two longitudinal studies, one that started in the 50s and ended in the 70s, another that followed kids from birth in the 70s all the way to the 90s. Both of these sets of huge, full generation research showed the exact same thing: high mental health, high achievement, especially good at enjoying solitude and actually welcoming solitude at times, but also incredible social abilities, being able to negotiate, get along with people. So we walk around not only with all these assumptions about child-free people being selfish and child-free life being empty, but even the one versus two, we have all of these assumptions and prejudices which get in the way of people making the decision that's right for their family. And this is especially crucial right now because we are also worried about the environment. And the difference between having one child and having two children is huge in terms of the carbon footprint, for instance. And many researchers and interviewers and mental health professionals are finding that one child is a solution that works well for a two-career couple to be able to manage to enjoy family life and also succeed at work. And that having that second child is, it's not just double what it was before. It's like geometrically, existentially, exponentially, much, much bigger because there's first of all, if you have only one child, you can, once that child is three, they're pretty portable. You can take them generally to fine restaurants and museums. If you have a three-year-old and a five-year-old, at least one of them is going to be crying or hungry or not want to get in the car seat. And so you spend a lot more time at home and a lot more time putting out fires. So that's a preconception that really gets in the way of the decision making.
I think that's fascinating. And I bet a lot of people listening or people who find out about that research will be reassured that having one child doesn't mean, okay, I'm on this 6 years of having kids journey that begins. And I would be selfish to turn back now because I would be doing that first child a disservice. So there's a lot of talk about selfishness when people get into the decision of having children. And I find it interesting. I remember about 10 years ago, we were having a discussion in class. I don't know how it got on to having kids, but the teacher said to us, anybody who decides not to have kids is very selfish. And I honestly didn't understand it. It didn't make sense to me. One of the perceptions is that if you don't have kids, you're selfish because you don't want to contribute to society. You care too much about yourself so that you don't want to put some of the care for yourself aside in order to help somebody else. But to me, it doesn't really make sense because you're not being selfish. That child doesn't exist yet. It's not like you're putting that child's life as a lesser priority to yourself. You're deciding, I'm not going to have a child because I want to live my life. And furthermore, I think people make decisions to have kids. I think selfish has a lot of baggage with it. I don't think it's selfish either way, but when somebody decides to have a kids, I think there's research that's shown the main reason most people decide to have kids is because they want a kid for themselves, for their own personal enjoyment and satisfaction. Exactly. They're not doing it because I want to contribute to the world, maybe on some level, but I think the main reason is probably the same reason as the people who don't want to have kids, because this is the best decision for my personal well-being.
Exactly, exactly. Everyone makes decisions or tries to make decisions that they think are going to be the best decision for their lives. And again, research and my clinical experience and my teaching experience on this topic, and I've been doing it for about 40 years because I started in 1978. Research all the way back in the late 70s and early 80s was showing what new research is showing as well, that child-free people actually contribute a great deal to society. For many child-free people, the reason they decide not to have children is that they're involved in huge environmental or political causes. They're architects designing buildings, which they're going to leave for future generations. When I look at physicians and mental health professionals and teachers, for example, the people who work with the most difficult populations, the children who need the most help, who are the most delayed, the people who have the most serious mental health problems, it's the child-free people who do a lot of the great both direct work and research in these fields because they don't have to go home to a child. They are able to devote themselves to their careers in, you know, many, many hours. And for some people, this is their actual job, for instance, with physicians or teachers. And for others, it's what they do when they're not at their 40-hour-a-week job. But they're able to pursue something they care about that for them is the way to contribute to society.
Yeah, I think it's important because I think a lot of people feel judged people feel that others are going to perceive them as selfish perhaps. Whereas that's interesting that not only I think logically not perceive them as selfish, but they're actually contributing a lot more to society.
Yes.
And that they're leading in some cases, and granted, we're talking in generality, study-based, there's anecdotes that could support any argument in the world.
Of course.
I think that's really interesting. We chatted a little bit about the environment. How does global warming and overpopulation affect some people's decisions, though?
There is actually an organization called Conceivable Future, which was founded by two women who realized that they would like to be mothers, but thought that it might not be fair to the environment. And so they're doing a lot of public education, and they go all over the country to go into people's living rooms and have conversations about the environment and is it possible to have children and also be good to the environment, that kind of thing. There's an organization called Dear Future, which helps people who already have children work with their children on activities the family can do together to make for a better environment. And there was one environmental law that was actually changed somewhere in the Pacific Northwest because a group of children with help from adults protested a change that was going to allow more pollution in some circumstance. So a lot of people think, well, I can have a child and I can have my child be part of the solution rather than part of the problem. So I actually haven't encountered anyone who's chosen to be child-free only because of the environment. What I do see is people who realize they could be happy either way and have a slight leaning towards child-free will kind of push themselves over the edge to that decision because of the environment. And then the other issue is people who might want to have two or three children might have one biological child and adopt the others. Or some people will decide to adopt a first child and never have a pregnancy.
Yeah. And I mean, adoption's a whole other conversation, which is interesting, of course. I think a big thing is if you don't have kids, some people would say, well, let's say somebody comes to you and says, I don't have kids. I imagine that the woman or the man might come to you and say, people have been telling me I'm going to be missing a whole part of the natural life experience. I'm not going to be living life to its fullest potential, and I'm going to regret not having kids. And it's part of our biological purpose to reprocreate. And those are kind of two different arguments, because we'll get back to the biological purpose. But right, the notion of you're missing a whole part of your life, your life is going to be less fulfilling. Kids is such an important thing. And once you make this decision past a certain age, it's kind of permanent. How have you experienced that notion influencing people?
Okay, well, we don't give in to all of our biological urges. You know, you might have a dessert that you like and want to have 50 more pieces of cake, but you don't give in to that biological urge because you know the quality of life would change.
Completely. Yeah. And I mean, even like evolutionarily, people who say evolutionarily our biological purpose is to reprocreate, evolutionarily our brains and consciousness have also developed to a point where we have higher order thinking to contemplate beyond that biological purpose. So to me, that doesn't resonate, but to some people, they might find that a pressure.
Well, one of the interesting things that I discovered when I first wrote my first edition of my book back in 1981, the more recent one was 2016, was that the word decide comes from a Latin root meaning to cut away from, de sedere. And every decision involves loss. Whatever you choose, you lose all the good things about the other option. So when people say to me, you know, how can we be so ambivalent? Why can't we make a decision? If you decide to have a child, you're giving up all of the freedom and spontaneity of a child-free life. If you love to travel, for instance, if you sometimes are so happy with your career that you want to work 50 or 60 hours that week instead of 35 or 40, you're not going to be able to do that. There are a lot of ways you're going to be tied down. And for a lot of straight couples who have really tried very hard to keep their relationships completely egalitarian, once a child comes into the picture, there are many different social and economic factors that make it much more common for the woman to spend more time with the child and the man to spend more time outside of the home, and for there to be conflicts about the childcare and the housework. So there are a lot of losses that come with having a child that you don't have to deal with to be child-free. And when people decide to be child-free, they're enjoying all the opportunities to continue to grow and change and enjoy life in many different ways, but they're giving up the satisfactions that they would have had to have a child that shared their genes with their partner, to to cuddle, to see a child grow and develop from infancy all the way up to college graduation and having their own children and grandchildren and so on. So there's a lot to give up either way. And one of the things that I say to people is it's not a question of whether you will regret your decision. You will regret your decision because there is so much to give up in having a child. And there's also a lot to give up if you choose to be child-free. So I tell people the question to ask yourself is, which decision will I regret least?
I love that, because that's, I think with society, there's often this constant search for perfection, the perfect choice. What is the best, what is the best thing that is perfect, that is right? And the notion that we are an imperfect species, and we are not able to have everything we want in life. I think that's important to know that you're compromising either way. And even though that might sound negative to somebody, I think framing it a bit more negatively sets your expectations a bit more realistically and takes a little bit of the pressure perhaps off of that.
So it's not a matter of one wrong decision, one right decision. I mean, for some people, that's true. There is only one right or wrong decision, and those are the people not asking for help, but they are just, you know, going ahead with their decisions. But for most people, it's a matter of looking up, so which would I get the most? You know, what would I have to give up? And looking at embracing all the things that appeal about one can make one feel more confident. So it doesn't, if people think that they have to be 100% when they've made a decision, then they feel like they have more work to do even when they've already made a decision. So one of the things that happens when people read my book or come to my workshops is that they realize that they already had a leaning and they were trashing it because they still had so many thoughts that were positive about the other choice. And so now they start looking for leanings rather than an absolute neon sign. And what I say is 60-40 is a decision. When 60% you want to have a child and 40% you want to be child-free, that's the beginning of a decision. You won't call it a decision until it's something like 70-30 or 80-20 or 90-10. But many people are on their way to a decision and they're ignoring that because they're so scared by the other voice that's saying, you know that's a bad decision, you know you really want Y and not X.
And when the importance of decision is, when the importance of a decision is as high as it is for this kind of case, it's, you're trying to get as close to 100% as you can. When you're finding a partner, you're trying to get as close to 100% as you can when you're picking a career. But I think we delude ourselves really in thinking that we're ever at 100% for anything in life. It's impossible to know. And an acceptance of that is important. So you're saying though, that a lot of people, it's the notion that people have less fulfilled lives without having kids. And granted, it's going to depend on the person. Yes. Isn't necessarily true, or it's definitely not true, because there's fulfillment. It's different types of fulfillment that they're experiencing.
A lot of this has to do with being conscious. If people consciously decide to be child-free, then they're aware that they have a lot of time, energy, perhaps more money because they're not paying money to raise a child, and asking, what can I do to make my life meaningful? And they're really appreciating that. And one of the great things about a child-free life is to be able to have your loved one, your relationship with your loved one, be deeper and more loving, to experience yourselves as a family of two, with extended family of nieces, nephews, parents, grandparents, and so on. But the quality of that love, when it is not adulterated by the needs to deal with the needs of young children, can be quite wonderful. And I would say that half the people who decide to be child-free are making that decision because they're already doing something they love, whether it's vocation or avocation. And to have a child, they would resent the child because they wouldn't be able to do as much of what their mission is, what they feel they were put on earth to do. And the other half of people decide to be child-free because they don't think they would be happy as parents. And they have to first make that decision, and then they can start asking, what next? What hasn't happened yet in my life that I would like to have happen? By the way, that's a really important question for everybody. When I begin a baby decision workshop, I say, this isn't just about baby and no baby. This is why I love this topic. It's about what hasn't happened yet in your life that you want to have happen before you die. So that for even people who choose to have a child, it might be, well, you know, there's that novel that I started writing in my 20s and I haven't looked at it for 10 years, or I always thought about doing something for the environment, but I haven't. So even for people who choose to have children, answering that question, what hasn't happened yet, can help you think about, is there a way you can give yourself a piece of something that you will be only touching on for the next 20 years and then can do more when your child or children leave home? So it's a really, really rich question.
I love the frameworks with which you examine this topic. And I mean, obviously you've got them, you're well regarded in your fields and you've been doing this for so many years. How risky is it to have kids for the sole purpose of them being there for you when you are older?
That is highly, highly risky.
It's highly, and how frequently do you see that as a reason why people want to have kids?
The people that I see do bring that up as a concern if they are going to be child-free, but it's just a tiny factor. Children can be very loving and responsible and want to help their parents when they're older, but you might have two kids and one of them might live in Japan and you're in the United States or Canada, and your other child might have a serious illness or be taking care of a child or a partner who has a serious illness, or might be, you know, Physicians Without Borders doing 90 hours of work in an underdeveloped country and not be able to come home and be your primary caregiver. So the idea that even loyal children will take care of you day in and day out is not typical.
It might be one of those things too, where people think, oh, well, that won't happen to me. My kids will be there for me. I'll be a good parent. Where realistically, I mean, and this is another discussion about parenting, I think there is some nature, nurture, and circumstance all involved there. Just because you're a good parent doesn't mean your kids are going to be there for you. And I think it could happen to anybody. I know people who've got 4 kids and none of them live at home. I know parents who have 1 kid and that kid is there and always present. So it's a nice notion having people to be there for you, of course. Right. But you just never know, which is part of that unfortunate part of life. You don't know.
Absolutely. And I also advise people who are deciding to be child-free or deciding to have only one child, if they are in financial circumstances that it's possible to save money, for their old age that would ordinarily be spent on a child or another child. Because if people can live where they want to live, whether it's in some kind of community or on their own or whatever, if they're able to be comfortable, there will be people who will care for them, whether it's their children or not.
Yeah, and talking about cost, I read something that it's approximately $250,000 to raise a child up until the age of 18. And that's not including anything past 18, including college, et cetera. It's expensive.
It is very expensive.
But my point is, if you were to put that money somewhere else, then, I mean, it's feasible for many people to say, okay, well, I'll plan for making sure there's somebody that's able to take care of me and look after me.
Yes. And many child-free people have very close relationships with their nieces and nephews who do sometimes play that caretaking role. And I interviewed one child-free woman who said, we use the money that we would have spent having kids to fly our nieces and nephews who live in California, they were on the East Coast, to special occasions. And we also fly out to them. So we have very close relationships with them. And of course, the idea they'll take care of us when we're older is like, you know, 1/100th of a piece. It's not even conscious for most people. But the idea that there are ways to be connected and that using one's money not to raise a child that one would not enjoy raising can be done to take care of, to offset the difficulty of not having a child there for you in the old age. And there's a whole profession of geriatric case managers who specialize in helping elderly people find the best possible living situations and be most self-actualized in doing volunteer work that they love and art and politics and all of that great stuff. I also would add, I worked in hospice for 6 years and I was very struck by some of the childless patients I worked with, how a niece or a nephew or a next door neighbor or someone that they had coached in soccer 20 years ago was a more involved, loving pleasure to give and help this person, caretaker, than people's actual biological children.
Yeah, as a doctor, I've seen that where patients come in. What's interesting is, so I've seen patients come in where they don't have kids, but there's somebody there who's bringing them in. And it seems like they're well taken care of, but they don't have kids. And just, I mean, like I said, a lot of the way we view these things is just how we've been indoctrinated to view them. And just, so even though I logically know that this person looks happy, they look fulfilled, it looks like they have close relationships, a part of me still does feel that, oh, I wish they had a kid. Or I wonder if they regret that they don't have kids. And the reason I say that is because it's easy to intellectualize all this stuff and talk about it.
Right.
But the reality is it is tough to get those preconceptions out of your head. I mean, in my mind still, when I see somebody who's older who doesn't have kids, I think, oh, there's a part of me that kind of feels feels bad for them, which is, I'm sure, how many of them do not want to be viewed. But I can't help that, because my experience, at least, has been I was raised by loving parents. So I expect I'll probably have kids, and you just assume that there's a lack of warmth and a lack of love in their lives. But I mean, that's not true. I have no idea what they're like.
Right. And it's so untrue. There's also the assumption that if you decide not to have kids, it's because you had an unhappy childhood. And there's so many people who have wonderful childhoods, and they're afraid to tell their parents that they've decided not to have kids. And one of the interesting things that I recommend to say to them is, well, let's say, for instance, if a woman is not going to have children because she's a superstar in her career, she might say, well, Dad, do you remember when I was 7 and when I was 12? And you always said, don't do what everybody else does, follow your heart, do what you're best at. It's because of the good childhood and because some of the wonderful ways that you two encouraged me that I now am choosing to be child free. So thank you for a great childhood. And please understand, this is actually part of the gift you gave me to be able to make the right life choice for me.
Yeah, I mean, that's beautiful. And I could also see the situation where, I mean, I have amazing parents, and I'm lucky, and I've had such an amazing childhood that it makes me more hesitant and tentative to have kids, because I don't want to be a dad if I can't be as good of a dad as my dad was, because he set a really high benchmark, and I don't want to.
That's a lot of pressure.
There's pressure there too. Yeah. It's interesting how people's upbringings will inevitably in some way, and probably in varying ways, affect whether they decide to have kids.
Yes.
What are some of the pressures people have or feel to have kids because of their parents?
Parents really do want to have grandchildren for the most part. There are people who really didn't enjoy raising their children and didn't choose to raise their children. The pregnancies just happened, who actually can be discouraging of kids deciding to have kids. But for the most part, parents would love to have a grandchild. And so the ideal situation for people choosing to be child-free is to have siblings who have already had children, so that their parents are already grandparents, even though they themselves won't be providing the children. But of course, that's not always.
I'm lucky in that regard. It's interesting. And ultimately, I mean, I'm sure if most people sat down with their parents logically and said, listen, I can't have the kid just because you want a grandkid, they'd probably say, yeah, right. I mean, I do understand that. And you need to do what's right for you. How does the experience, do you find, of making this decision differ between a male and a female?
That's an interesting question. I think that most women, even if they were raised as feminists and spent many years thinking they wouldn't have children, there is the girls playing dolls as children, and there is more discussion and anticipation of being parents. So it's often something that women, when they are of childbearing age, have thought about for a longer time than their male partners.
Are there different concerns, like a male versus a female, in terms of, well, when I have the kid, how it's going to affect their life?
Well, I think that for women, there is the idea that this is going to be so all-consuming. Will they be harming their love relationship? Will they be harming work? Will they be able to tolerate both work and parenting? Men often worry more about being providers. If they're at a place in their career where they're not earning what they would ideally be earning, they often have concerns about that, especially if the wife is talking about not working or working less. A lot of men have some trouble thinking about parenthood because their father was distant. Their father didn't spend much time being a parent and wasn't particularly nurturing when he did. So they feel that they don't have the role model that they need.
Hmm.
They don't want to be a father the way their father was a father. They want to be a better father, but they're not quite sure how to do that. And one thing that often helps them is if they have family members or friends who are somewhat older than them, who already have a child, and they're able to see how much those men are enjoying parenting and how well they're doing in nurturing their children.
Yeah. Do you find that it's tough for a couple during the childbearing years to make a decision and then stick with it, because they know that there's still an option? Like maybe they've come and seen you at age 33 or 34, they make a decision, we're not going to have kids. is there still that part of them that says, okay, well, I still could change my mind if I want to because I've got that time. Do those doubts start creeping back in as you reach your mid-40s or your...
Well, that does occasionally happen, but that's much more likely to happen to people who don't make a conscious decision, who just kind of do what I call child-free drift. They just don't get around to having a child and they've never made a decision. People who actually decide to be child-free usually reshift gears to make the most of their child-free life and don't keep asking, well, it's not too late. Do I want to go back and do that? That does occasionally happen, but not that often. A situation where that might happen is, let's say, someone decides to be child-free, either as a single person or in a particular relationship, but that relationship ends through death or divorce, and that person is partnered with a new person who would love to have children, and they're able to be, they're able to fantasize that parenting would be different with this person and could be a great pleasure. So that's an example of where people might change their mind later on.
Yeah, and of course, there's nothing wrong with changing your mind. It's just whether it's the degree of anxiety it provokes if you keep on flip-flopping and it's a constant source of questioning and doubting.
Right. People don't want to do that. They want to have a decision. And the thing is, you know, I always tell people this when they first come to see me or come to a workshop. You're going to be amazed after you make this decision how much more energy you have. You have no idea how much of your energy is going into trying to make this decision, even when you're not thinking about it. And, you know, you don't know whether to buy the station wagon or the sports car. You don't know whether you can plan this great backpacking trip to South America or whether you've got to save every penny for childcare. So there's a certain freedom that comes up once that decision is made. And so people move forward. And I talk to people about grieving the loss of the decision they didn't make. For people to become comfortable with deciding to have a child, I work with them on grieving the freedoms they had as child-free people and to look at a few things like if you love to meditate or you love to hike in nature, building right into your schedule and your plans, how you'll have pieces of that even if you can't go traveling 8 weeks of a year, building in, well, being a parent doesn't mean that we can't ever, you know, go up to Maine and camp and kind of thing. And for people choosing to be child-free, I work with them on letting go of the satisfactions they would have had if they'd enjoyed kids. And we brainstorm about ways they can give themselves pieces of parenthood, such as being close to nieces and nephews or a best friend's child who was just born and seeing that child grow and develop from infancy all the way up to adulthood.
Well, Merle, I think this is all totally fascinating. I've learned a lot from this, and I think the main point really is it's a decision, it's a choice, and just don't fall into a situation where you just decide to do it because that's what you do. And I think it's important to say this isn't a conversation about don't have kids. That's not at all what you do. This is a conversation where you help people make that important decision. If you want
Absolutely.
Kids, amazing. If you don't, that's okay too.
And absolutely, yes. I'm not advocating the child-free life. I actually have two daughters, and one has a child, and the other is child-free. So it sort of, you know, illustrate the either-or. I believe that if people think that child-free life is terrible, or they would be a terrible person, they don't really have the freedom to embrace parenthood. They're doing it because they don't want to be that terrible person who didn't have a child.
Hmm.
And I think that when people make conscious decisions, they have a much better chance of being happy. And one thing I didn't say that I'd like to add is I talk about growth decisions, which are what is the decision that involves risk but the most growth for you, and safety decisions, which are made out of fear. And it's a growth decision to have a child. It's a growth decision to decide to be child-free. It's even a growth decision to postpone the decision for a certain amount of time while working on specific financial, psychological, and logistical issues, and then revisiting it a year later or 2 years later. The non-decisions are the non-accidental accident. And it is amazing how many well-educated people who have contracepted perfectly for 15 or 20 years, suddenly have an accident during the time that they're trying to decide whether or not to have a child. It kind of takes them off the hook. Since they didn't directly decide, if they're unhappy, they don't have to blame themselves. And there's also the non-decision to be child-free, which I also call child-free drift. There's never a conscious decision. It's, oh, we'll decide later. We'll think about it later. Doesn't seem to be in the cards. And the problem with those non-decisions is that people wind up feeling like victims, and they don't embrace the beauty and the possibility and the power and time and energy that making a choice allows them to do.
With the people who have, you were describing, they're using contraception and then they're in that process of deciding whether they want kids, and then they have a kid and that kind of pushes them one direction. Are they typically relieved because they don't have to make the decision, or do you find that they have a more difficult experience in embracing parenthood?
Okay, those are not the people who come to, the people who come to me know that they don't want to make an unconscious decision. But as a clinician, I have observed many people like that, and anecdotally, and talked to colleagues. I think that those people are a little less comfortable with life in general. I think that they feel more like victims and less like the authors of their lives. And it is a way of getting off the hook. But I think in terms of the quality of life and enjoying parenthood, I don't think being taken off the hook is really worth it.
Yeah. Well, Merle, are there any other thoughts that you wanted to share with me and our listeners about this topic?
Well, this has been a great conversation. I love your curiosity and the way that you engage and your sense of humor. This has been really fun.
Thank you so much.
I would just like to add that the baby decision is available in paperback and in ebook, and it's about to be available in audiobook. Probably the end of the summer, the audiobook will be available. And I think that's especially great for guys who don't like to read a lot of, you know, touchy-feely sociological things. So right now their female partners, assuming we're talking about straight couples, are saying, you know, they're highlighting a few pages here and there saying, you're interested, and I'll talk about it. And I think if they can listen to it while they're driving, and their female partner isn't sitting there saying, CC, doesn't this make you want to have a child or want to be child-free? They have the freedom to listen to it on their own in a neutral kind of way.
I can vouch. I've read it. It's a fantastic book. Well, Merle, thank you so, so much. You've been phenomenal. You are very articulate. You clearly know your stuff. And thank you very, very much for joining us.
You're so welcome.
And thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of Preconceived. And we hope you'll join us next time. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Preconceived. Please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast platform you use, and be sure to rate and review us. We'll see you next time.